All right. Well, now we have a very fun guest. I'm very excited about this. The puppetry program at UConn is one of the things that's very distinctive about UConn. It's one of the things that we're known for. And it's one of the things that sets us apart from just about every other university. And so we are very fortunate to have with us someone who is practically synonymous with UConn puppetry. He's a professor in the Department of Puppetry. He's also the director of the Ballard Institute and Museum of Puppetry, which is in Storrs Center. It's right next to the UConn bookstore. I am a frequent visitor, and if you haven't been there yet, you should go down there and check it out. There's always new and fun exhibits. Joining us today to talk about puppetry and to talk about some upcoming performances is John Bell. John, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Julie. It's a big pleasure to be with you to talk about puppets and UConn.
Yes, yes. And before we talk about the upcoming performances, I'm kind of curious. I'd like to know how you got interested in this art form and sort of how your journey brought you to UConn.
Yeah, super interesting. As I look back on it, I was interested in theater in high school and in college, and I was acting, you know, in plays and stuff in Hamlet and Ibsen plays and things. And then I sort of realized I wasn't a great actor, something about trying to inhabit another character. And I was in college in Vermont, and the Bread and Puppet Theater, who's in residence this week at UConn, they were performing shows. At that time, it was the 70s. The shows were about the Vietnam War, which as students, we were all thinking about because we might get drafted and then the war was going on. And it was really interesting because the puppeteers, they perform like I was doing with acting, but then they're performing with masks and puppets and objects. And then also puppeteers are like making sets and setting up the stages and playing music and doing choreography, dancing, speaking, making things out of clay and paper mache, loading the bus, unloading, setting up, striking. And that overall approach of doing everything really appealed to me. It sort of takes the pressure off of having to be present on stage yourself, which actors do in an amazing way. And with puppets, we'd get involved with this interesting thing of placing the focus on these objects and letting them tell the story. I find that dynamism super interesting. And then as I learned later, studying theater history, it's like a global tradition all over the world. Puppetry is something that unites all cultures pretty much. You know, everybody, every culture at some time or another has invented some way of telling stories with these objects, masks, puppets, et cetera. So I got interested and I joined the Bread and Puppet Theater and was a member of the company for 10 years. And then as a result of my travels in Europe and Latin America and North Africa, I thought, what's the history of this? So I studied theater history, and then I thought, oh, maybe I'll be a theater professor. And that's brought me to UConn. So where I've had this great opportunity to combine my interests in puppetry with theater history and the amazing puppet arts program and the amazing Ballard Institute. So I'm really, really lucky.
When you just were talking about that, you actually almost hit on everything I wrote in one of my questions. So when we think of puppets, a lot of times us people who are not in the puppet world, a lot of times you think it's kind of for kids, right? But you were talking about your kind of first exposure was a show about the Vietnam War. And as the Ballard proves, you know, there are so many different puppets from different cultures, from all different timeframes, used for so many reasons. Why do you think puppetry is such an effective tool for so many kinds of storytelling?
Well, I don't know if I have an answer, but it's really interesting and it's really essential. You know, and the evidence is that, you know, it is an effective means. I think part of it has to do with how we define puppets, because as you suggested, I think beginning in the late 19th century in the United States, they developed this idea of the lives of children and the idea that puppets were, you know, the best way to reach children. And the older tradition that puppets are important parts of a society, and they talk about religion and politics and the life of the community. You know, that's you see everywhere. That kind of diminished, and we got to this point of thinking that puppets were for kids, although we know they're not. Why they connect so well, I think it's a displacement because both the audience and the performers are focused on this object that you're giving life to. So, you know, you pick up a piece of wood that's sculpted or stone or leather or now more recently plastic or metal, and you move it around and you give it a voice, or you say, here's a character, or here's God, or here's the king, or here's, a housewife, or here's the guy down the street. And people will say, okay, that's interesting. Okay, that's who it is. And we all get fascinated by that operation of giving life to an object that's dead. In some cases, in the older forms, it was a living entity, a part of a tree or leather from an animal. And the audience doesn't say, no, wait a minute, that's not really the king. That's a piece of wood, or that's a hand puppet, or, that's a piece of cloth that looks like Kermit the Frog. You don't do that. You say, oh, okay, now what? And then the puppeteer is able to say, well, this is what happens. And we all get engaged. So there's something kind of magical, or like Sigmund Freud says, uncanny, bringing life to dead objects. Like, that's really metaphysical, but it's also very effective. We puppeteers think about these kind of things a good bit.
It's really interesting.
One of the things that going to the Ballard Institute has kind of taught me is that the category of puppet is much broader than I had thought before. I mean, before I knew anything about it, I thought of puppets as being, marionettes and the sort of traditional, but it's everything from the character balloons of the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade to sports mascots and action figures and things. Could you talk about some of the breadth of it and things that the principles of puppetry apply to a lot of things that people might not really think of as puppets?
Exactly. In some cases, the definition of puppets, has been along kind of European lines. So there's hand puppets and marionettes, which are operated from above by strings, and rod puppets, and then shadow puppets. And a kind of strict adherence to those definitions leaves out a lot of times where sculpture and objects and images are used in performance in the ways I was trying to relate earlier. So, you have African rod puppets and African sculpture and performance, maybe that's more like masks or it's dance, or Asian forms of performance in China, India, Indonesia, and Japan, or Native American performance that, like in the Northeast with Iroquois false face masks, or in the Northwest Coast, Kwakiutl culture or Zuni and Pueblo culture, full of these types of ritual performances that are essential to the way a community runs. But if puppets are only hand puppets or marionettes in a European sense, then none of that is on the board. And then you get into these weird things where you say, well, there's a famous puppeteer, Tony Sarg, and his biographer said, well, Tony Sarg brought puppets to America. And it's like, well, no, Native Americans and people from all over were using these forms. So a broader definition can include, as you pointed out, mascots, which, like Jonathan the Husky, is so important to Yukon culture, robotics, these mechanical machines, and machines performing as representatives of humans have been around for years, ritual objects, and religious performances, like in Jewish religion, the Torah scrolls are considered to be like a person. You treat them like a human being. In Catholic Mass, you take a piece of bread and wine, and that becomes the body and blood of Christ. Like, these are very powerful objects that are important to the communities that use them. And so I think this wider sense of puppets and what we call performing objects is super interesting, especially now with, like, we think about robots, and machines, and are they taking over, or who are they, and what did they want? The roots of that are in puppetry, just as the roots of, like, screen performance, computer screens and television and film really go back to shadow theater, which is also a screen performance.
Would you consider, like, Disney animatronics puppets?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, Disney World is that's a huge place for puppets and performing objects. And a lot of puppeteers work there. I mean, there are puppet shows, straightforward rod puppet shows. Like, there's one for Harry Potter series, I think. But, there's the Star Wars set where they're wearing masks, or you have, these robot characters, or Jabba the Hutt. Those are performed by puppeteers. And the animatronics are, as I was saying, a kind of mechanical version of puppetry, the Hall of Presidents or Pirates of the Caribbean. You know, it's all about making these figures that move and represent stories. And, you know, you don't have, the puppeteer doesn't have their hand in the puppet or on the puppet, but instead they've constructed a machine and maybe they're controlling it through an algorithm or, you know, some other indirect means of manipulation. But Disneyland or Disney World are both exciting because it's full of these object performances that are very effective and satisfying.
That's so cool. I never thought of that as part of puppetry. That's really, really interesting.
Yeah, a lot of our graduates end up working with animatronics for amusement parks, or like there's been a lot of puppets on Saturday Night Live in the past few weeks made by a studio called Monkey Boys in Philadelphia. And a number of our graduates are working there right now making those puppets. So among other places, there's a lot. Yeah.
That's great.
You mentioned Freud's essay on the uncanny.
Yeah.
And there's kind of a trope in popular culture of like the sinister or the evil puppet, you know, like the ventriloquist dummy that comes alive and sort of, you know, where do you think that comes from? Where do you think there's this sort of like kind of a sense of eeriness that some people feel about puppets?
Well, I think it became eerie around the time Freud and this other psychologist, Ernst Jentsch, who wrote about the uncanny, started writing about it. And to my mind, it has to do with modernity's efforts to separate nature and culture, in which humans start building canals and industrial machines and manufacture, and capitalism expands around the world. And at that point, the natural world becomes alienated. And puppetry and ritual performance that I was trying to talk about, that becomes a little suspect, like, oh, what are these wacky people and these Native Americans doing? And these people in Africa and Asia, they connect religion with these object performances, but we believe in science and rationality and the scientific process. And at that point, play with puppets becomes a little bit weird. And I think, as you point out with Freud in this question of the uncanny, there's something sort of suspicious or malevolent. And we see that with, like, you know, what is it, Chucky, you know, the Chucky movies where like the doll comes alive and it's there's a Saturday Night Live sketch on that about that recently. Or robots, you know, oh, the robots are going to take over, you know. And so because these are not human things, there can be a sense of fear. But I think the older sense of puppets and objects and masks is much more, you know, amenable. You know, they're just part of the life of the community. They could be bad. They could be devils, you know, but they also can be angels, and thinking of medieval theater in Europe. You know? So I think it's a recent development that we think, uh-oh, there's something weird about that puppet.
A little unsettling. It's too real. I was wondering if you have a favorite type of puppet. And since you're the head of the Ballard Institute and you have so many puppets in the collection and exhibits that have come through, if you have a specific favorite puppet that you have encountered.
I don't know. It's all super, super interesting, you know, to me. Like marionettes are really difficult. Like I can't do the marionette movement well. I think I like rod puppets and hand puppets. Hand puppets are really old. It's Punch and Judy. And with one person, you can do two puppets and then you can do choreography and make them dance, which is super traditional. And they've traditionally been tricksters, you know, characters who make fun of the powers that be, you know, or make fun of society's rules. That's the essence of Punch, which is sort of why Punch is a problematic figure right now. It's a street theater, a performance. It's a popular performance traditionally. And it's where the ideas that a culture or society is thinking about get expressed. So I guess if I had to choose, it would be hand puppets.
Talk about what's happening on campus this week. This is Bread and Puppet Theater in residence for a couple of performances. What are they going to be doing? What are folks going to be seeing?
Well, all week the theater is rehearsing this Greek tragedy by Aeschylus, the Persians. It was written in 472 BC after the Greek victory over the Persians. So they're working, there's 16 puppeteers from the Bread and Puppet Company, including the director, Peter Schumann, working with an equal number of volunteers from UConn and from the Mansfield Willimantic Stores community, rehearsing every day and then performing outdoors on the South Campus lawn Saturday and Sunday, April 23rd and 24th at 4 p.m. This tragedy with lots of giant puppets and masks and music by Johann Sebastian Bach, the St. Matthew Passion, and other types of music, dance, use of big paintings as performing objects, and of course as an outdoor performance, they'll be performing on the grass. It's a pretty, you know, interesting environmental piece of theater. And in connection with that, the theater's performing, I guess we're broadcasting to Wednesday, April 20th at lunchtime on Fairfield Way. The theater's going to do an outdoor street show, which is kind of a trademark of the Bread and Puppet Theater. Oh, let's do a show on the street. And that'll be most likely a cantastoria, which is a picture performance where you have big paintings that are narrated with poetry and text and music and choreography. So that's going to happen, hopefully, in a place where a lot of students might see it. And then Thursday, also at lunchtime, the 21st, in the Mobius Theater, designed by Jerry Rojo in the Dramatic Arts Department, there'll be a forum, one of our puppet forums, where the theater, Peter Schumann and his colleagues from the company will talk about the creation of this tragedy, this production of Aeschylus's tragedy, and what it means and how you create, especially during the time of COVID, where it's pretty challenging. So all of those activities, and we're really hoping people will come to the Saturday, Sunday performances. If there's rain, which hopefully there won't be, the weather report looks good, they'll perform in E.O. Smith High School Auditorium.
It sounds fantastic. I'm definitely going to be there. I can't wait to see it. And how are things at the Ballard Institute right now? I know the pandemic was challenging for a lot of museums because people couldn't actually go there for a while. And I know it's been reopened to, I think, appointment only right now. Is that the case?
Well, actually, in the past few weeks, you know, we've changed because the changed COVID protocols of the university and the School of Fine Arts have allowed us to open up to anybody who walks through the door. So that's been really great for us. People are walking through the door and coming to see our current exhibit, Hecho in Puerto Rico, Four Generations of Puerto Rican Puppetry, and our permanent exhibit, The World of Puppetry. And our colleague, Matt Sorensen, has been doing puppet workshops in our workshop area. We've been doing museum tours for staff and students and groups from around the area. So that's really, really nice. It's wonderful to see people in the museum. We're also doing an interesting project. This is an interesting moment right now for UConn puppetry because there's five different projects that really span the whole range of puppetry in the US right now. One is a television project called Feel Your Best Self that my colleague Emily Wicks has organized with Sandy Chafulias from the NEAG School of Education. And they were making a series of 12 short videos in Hamden, Connecticut about, you know, health and well-being for kids, you know, especially during COVID times, that they've been shooting and they'll distribute nationwide starting in July. Super interesting, kind of coming from the television Henson side of things. Also, this weekend, the Connecticut Repertory Theater is opening Little Shop of Horrors, which opens Thursday, April 21st and runs for 2 weeks. You know, one of the classic pieces of a Broadway musical with puppets, with these amazing Audrey II, you know, man-eating plants, beautiful puppets made by the Puppet Arts Program. And we've also had a colleague in the Puppet Arts Program, Matthew Cohen, did Purim Spiel a couple of weeks ago at the West Hartford Jewish Community Center called Wayang Esther, which brought in the art of Javanese shadow theater, of which Matthew is a master, and the holiday and story of Purim together. And these are all different interesting quadrants, you know, the discovery of Asian puppet theater, Broadway performance, television performance that kind of goes back to Jim Henson's work, and then this alternative puppet theater for adults with Bread and Puppet. So it's a very rich moment in puppetry at UConn this spring.
It really shows off the versatility of puppetry.
Yeah.
You know, it can do a lot of different things.
I guess that's why I like it, because there's so many different things and they're all interesting. And say, oh, that's interesting. They're making this, they're doing that. The Puerto Rican show, Hecho in Puerto Rico, is like that, because there's many different forms of puppetry, and that shows up through June 11th. And it's just fascinating to see how the culture on this, you know, relatively small island takes in these influences from Taino culture and Afro-Caribbean culture and Spanish culture and United States culture, and puts together in a wide variety of different forms, television, live theater, processions, other types of puppet shows. It's, I just find it super inspiring.
I may take a walk to the Ballard today, I think.
Wait, we will be happy to see you.
It's beautiful out. I'm doing it.
Well, fantastic. Folks, if you're listening, you're on campus today, April 20th. Fairfield Way at noon, tomorrow, the 21st, Mobius Theater, and this weekend, both Saturday and Sunday, on the lawn. Come down. I'll be there, but don't let that stop you. It's going to be a great time. Bread and Puppet Theater, truly world-renowned. They're a fantastic performance. And John, thank you so much for joining us. This has been great.
Thank you. It was so nice to meet you.
Thanks, Julie, and thanks, Tom. I really appreciated talking with you.